Noontime, December 19th, 2017. Hence, it is time for a Noontime show. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. I have a cold. Bear with me. All right. It snowed all day here yesterday in Maine. But I know it didn't snow in Oklahoma, where my good friend John Harrington is. He's going to join us. This is a show on net neutrality. He's one of the experts as president of Funds for Learning, the Grady Rae Consultant Company. Fundsforlearning.com. We'll give him a plug because he's going to spend some time with us telling us what net neutrality means to the schools. We've got some articles here that we can go over, comments from ISTE, comments from COSIN and the NEA, et cetera, et cetera, all about what this really means as the FCC changed the rules last week. We'll just have to see what happens. I'm anxious to hear what John has to say. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, tweet it out at edutalkradio, friend us on Facebook at edutalkradio. Did I mention I'm Larry Jacobs and this is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio? Tomorrow's Wednesday, the Wednesday before Christmas, and after tomorrow's shows, we're going to be taking off until January 2nd. All right, so I don't know what you're going to do over the holidays without us, but whatever. All right, let me bring on John. I want to get right to this subject. Dr. Harrington, are you there?
I don't know what I'm going to do over the holidays without new shows from you, Larry. I mean,
I know.
Obviously, there's Netflix, but that only can take you so far.
Netflix, get up. That's nothing. That's nothing. I feel terrible for you and the rest of the audience that you won't be able to listen to Education Talk Radio. However, you can listen to our archives, John. Just go over to education-talkradio.org and just scroll down, and your holiday will be saved.
Okay, there we go. Thank you,
there
Larry.
You go.
Now, okay.
You feel better now? You okay? Can we go on?
Yes, I can move on now. Thank you.
Good.
And,
good. I knew it would be tough.
It's just
trying to break you.
It's
in here.
Good. You know. Yeah. So now
is
we
Santa
know what
Claus
we
coming?
Can do.
Is Santa Claus coming to
no,
Oklahoma?
No, he just came. He just came. Now
oh.
I know about all the streaming, you know,
there
that I can
go.
Listen to Education Talk Radio online anytime. Thank you.
It's a blessing. It's a blessing. It's a Christmas blessing coming your way.
It's a Christmas miracle, really.
It is. It's a Hanukkah, Harry, and Santa Claus got together to make this happen, John. All right, it's absolutely incredible. Right? How you doing down there? Everything good? I bet you're busy.
Well, we are. You know, we just completed a kind of a bonus filing window for schools and libraries that were impacted by the hurricanes summer.
Good.
And so the FCC had opened up a special window for that. And so we just completed that filing window. And then actually the next E-rate filing window opens right after the first of the year. So we're kind of
Busy.
One and preparing for the next round of E-rate paperwork.
And are you letting your people off? Are you letting your people off for the holidays? That was my question. Are they going
to? Well, I have to force them. Actually, they want to keep doing the E-rate paperwork. I'm like, hey guys, no.
Yeah.
So have to unplug the computers. Like, no, go home, spend time with your family.
I hope they know how lucky they are, John. I hope they know how lucky they are.
That's right.
It's that simple. Okay. Hey, I was reading an article. Where the heck was it here? I just got it right here. Hold on. It's on the74million.org. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, I have.
Yes, the 74. I don't know what 74 million is. Is that school kids or something? 74 million?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Is that your salary? I don't know. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
Okay, and schools could see higher bills, less new educational software after net neutrality vote, emphasis on the word could, but most teachers don't even know it yet. That's the subject of this article. It's pretty good, the 74million.org. And John, you're the expert, you really are, and were you shocked when they did this? What's going on with the FCC? And you know Chairman Pai and all the others, so what's going on?
Absolutely. Well, I think the 74 million does refer to the number of school-age children in America, and you know the topic here, of course, is connecting those students. And you know, to me, that is the main topic. You know, the primary issue has to do with connectivity and digital equity, making sure that, you know, these students are all connected. And and then sort of as a sub discussion is issues like net neutrality, which are really
Right.
For the folks that are connected. You know, one of the things I've sort of been disappointed about.
Let's get them connected first. Use your E-rates. Fundsforlearning.com.
Yeah. So, you know, I think one of the things I think an opportunity that's been lost in some of this debate about net neutrality is, you know, just the issue of connectivity in general.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, there are millions and millions of Americans, millions of students, millions of families that are not online.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's right.
You know, one of the, and so I think that there are, we can talk to specifics of course, net neutrality and what the FCC is doing. I think that is a platform for a bigger discussion that we need to have as a nation, and that is making sure that, you know, our people are connected to the internet, that they're online, and then that, you know, that they're digitally literate. And one of, you know, part of being digitally literate is understanding, you know, the sources of content, and things like throttling and filtering and blocking and all these sort of things, I think is part of being a good digital citizen and understanding where you're getting the information or maybe where you're not getting the information from.
Right. Right. Media literacy, you know, is the key. You know?
Yeah.
Yes, me.
I was in I had the opportunity to attend something called the Global Entrepreneur Summit in India last month.
Oh, wow.
As a representative, I was invited by the Department of State to go as part of the delegation from the United States.
Nice.
And a lot of the discussion there was about getting people online, making sure that people are connected. You know, in India, for example, there are 1.3 billion people. And they've actually now crossed the 400 million mark, and 400 million people online. Which is, you know, more than is online in the United States. And but it was just fascinating to me to hear so many discussions from around the globe about this issue of getting people connected and making sure they're connected. And I think we all recognize so much more how absolutely critical it is that people are online, that they have access to information. And I think that's a lot of the passion that's fueling the concerns about net neutrality, right? Hey, we want to make sure that people can get the information that they want, that there's a level playing field for accessing content online, and because it's so important for today's society.
And it's so important, if I may, for today's schools. I mean, you know, the bigger companies that provide, you know, the internet streaming for content for schools, okay, the ones that have a lot of money are going to be just fine. And I work with a lot of them. They're fine companies. I don't mean to say that. But for all those nonprofits out there who also have a ton of information to get schools use every day, I read in this article, the 74 million, it's basically like a if we take away the net neutrality, the companies that have the big bucks can pay to go in the commuter lane. Okay, get their data across to the commuter lane where everybody else, and this was their analogy, was stuck in traffic. Okay, and one of the people, I think it was Rich Culotta over at ISTE in this article, said that you know, the education leaders not really understanding all this per se, the technology behind it, haven't done enough and spoke out enough to the FCC. Okay, and why they do this, John? What's the point of doing it? What's the point? That's what I'm trying to figure out here.
Well, actually, it's a part of a bigger discussion, really related to access to content and controlling the flow of information, right? And also sort of sprinkle in some macroeconomics and competitive theories, right? So on one hand,
Thank you, George Orwell.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So on one hand, you've got the concerns about making sure individuals have access to websites, that you know, all websites are sort of treated equally. On the other hand, you've got a more of a market force theory or debate that actually was sort of the status quo before 2015. So, you know, these rules, net neutrality regulations that we're talking about, were only implemented in 2015. So if you think back to what the internet was like in 2014, that's probably going to give you a good idea of what it's going to look like, you know, in 2018. You know, it's most people were not particularly in tune to the fact that, you know, these regulations were being put in place in 2015. And my guess is that experientially, most people probably aren't going to know the difference in 2018. You know, so these regulations weren't in place that long. So they, you know, which, so in general, you know, I think it's, these are more philosophical debates, and they have to do with the really the fine points of FCC regulations that oftentimes impact the bottom line of, you know, very large corporations, and it has less to do with individual users. So, you know, I can talk about schools and libraries, and from a school and library's perspective, if they are concerned about a ISP, an internet service provider, blocking traffic, what I am telling them to do is simply put into your requirements when you are going out to bid for internet access.
Mm.
Make it a requirement that that the ISP cannot block traffic without your permission. Now, of course, for schools, they block a lot of traffic, right? But it's
right,
because they have to filter
right.
content.
Right.
You know, so there's plenty of space out there for filtering and for blocking content. It's really about who's controlling that. And that to me is the whole essence of this debate. In the from a school's perspective, they indeed want to block content, but they want to be in the driver's seat for it.
Right.
And who is calling the shots on that? And, you know, should that be the ISP, or should that be the content providers? Frankly, I sort of have I like to keep one eye on all these big conglomerates. You know, whether it's an AT&T or a Verizon or a Google and a Facebook. Frankly,
right.
I think we have to kind of be mindful of the fact that all of these entities play a vital role in helping provide information to us, and they also control it, you know, and understanding that and you know, what they do and don't do and how they prioritize content and, you know, where there's paid prioritization, for example, whether it's from a content or a bandwidth provider or a content provider. You know, these are sort of important discussions for us all to be having. But all that to say, you know, I'm advising schools and libraries simply when they go out to bid for internet access to build into their contract that they don't want, you know, any of their traffic throttled or blocked without their permission. Again, they may want some of that. You know, schools more and more are consumers of distance learning and video conferencing, high definition field trips, you know, to the other side of the planet. And in fact, a school may be interested in paying more for a high quality connection that allows them to have a non-jittery, non-downloading, buffering kind of experience for their students,
mm-hmm.
right? So, but that should be the school's call to make if they want to avail themselves of those sorts of opportunities. But I think they can address a lot of their net neutrality concerns by building that into their contract with their ISP.
That's what goes. So how does this affect what they need to? I got to combine what you do with this. Okay, can they get more dollars from E-rates, and this probably isn't even clear yet, more dollars from E-rates to offset if in fact there are any additional costs, like getting a better service than they were expecting, needing a better service than they were expecting?
Yeah, so,
can they build that into their E-rate stuff? That's a key thing. All these things, and I'll quote our good buddy, the CEO of COSIN, okay, Keith Kruger, who said that this could prompt, our good buddy, who could prompt higher bills for schools if this goes, if they're required to pay extra for certain online services. And again, it's a lot of ifs. He also said that this is important. New education technology companies could be steamrolled, I'm reading from this, by more established, better resourced companies that can afford to partner with internet providers to offer faster service. So he's concerned about A, the higher bills for schools, and B, are new companies going to be able to break themselves into the door? That's not your concern, but my concern is, can they ask for more funding from E-rates to get the better internet service and cover these higher bills if in fact they happen?
What,
yeah.
what I would say is the first thing that schools and libraries should do that are concerned about this topic is just be upfront with their internet service provider that they don't want they're not going to consider bids from vendors that are blocking traffic or throttling their access to certain sites. Period.
But what if the one who comes in, oh no, we won't block it, but it's, I'll make up a number, 20% more than Ed's internet service down the street.
Well, I mean, they currently have to. I mean, right now, schools have lots of rules about how they evaluate pricing and quality of service and all that. You know, so if one vendor comes in and, you know, it's going to cost a lot more, they're going to have to evaluate. Well, is there a quality trade-off? Correct. So that land they already live in. In terms of, okay, you know, what's the quality of this service? What's the quality of this internet connection going to be? What's the per megabit? Why does this one cost more than the other? And so schools already have that's what they have to do already. So if someone comes in and the school would say, hey, we don't want you blocking our traffic without our permission or throttling our access at all to any websites, period. And now we'll talk to anyone that meets those requirements. Okay, so I think that, you know, that for now, obviously an individual consumer doesn't necessarily have that option. You know, so that is a different debate if we want to talk about concerns for consumers versus concerns for industrial grade consumers of bandwidth, which are what schools and libraries are.
Yeah.
Right?
They're, no, let's
if you
talk
go
about them.
The community,
yeah.
Talk about the school district is one of the biggest consumers of bandwidth in town. And so they have that leverage that they can just say, hey, we're not going to have this, and we're only going to talk to those that will play by these rules. Now, that being said, they may, like I said earlier, they may be interested in paying more for a high-speed connection that is dedicated for video content, for Skyping or teleconferencing. In that case, that connection would still qualify for an E-rate discount. So the school, from their perspective, it comes back to what are their needs and what are their connectivity needs, and then they can apply their E-rate discount to that connection as they see fit. So they can't use E-rate dollars for content, never have, never will.
Right.
So they can't use it for a subscription. They can't, buy a whole bunch of Netflix accounts or something. They can't do that. But for their bandwidth, their connections to the internet, as a practical matter, even today, we see school districts that have, different burst requirements. The notion that this traffic just sort of flows evenly is kind of a misnomer. It doesn't anyway. The way that the internet works.
Interesting.
Vendors already today try to treat, for example, a voice call different than an email with an attachment. And so, because not all traffic is created equal. And so the schools may actually be interested in something that allows them to have a guaranteed quality of service that's higher. But that'll really be up for them to decide if that type of opportunity even manifests itself in the marketplace. So it's not there today. I don't know that it's going to be there today, quite frankly.
And let's just look. I think Chairman Pai worked for didn't he work for Verizon? Did I read that right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's use Verizon as an example. Okay. Verizon has money. All right. Would they be able to pay an internet service provider? Well, they're able to. Would they pay to kind of dominate that ISP? Is that a possibility?
Well, I think the common concern is if Verizon has certain if Verizon has certain websites that they want to prefer over other websites for whatever reason. Maybe they own it. Maybe they own the content. They get a piece of the revenue. Whatever. Preferentially direct traffic that way. And again, this is where I look at this as a bigger discussion, because I think that is a very good question. you know, what role should Verizon play in directing traffic somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
But that
right.
same question really can be applied to Facebook. It can be applied
oh, I
to
agree.
Google,
I
for example.
I was only using
you know?
Verizon as an example. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. So
yeah.
I think, and but this is where I go back to a national discussion, digital literacy, really tackling this discussion and understanding where and how content and websites are prioritized and directed. You know, whether you show up on the first page of a Google search or not has a huge impact on whether the world even sees you. You know, how does Google prioritize those things? Facebook, for example, will throttle certain content that websites actually have to pay to get their content distributed at a certain level because Facebook will actually throttle the content of, you know, just what they're concerned that ISPs will do. Actually, Facebook does that, you know. So I think that, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but I think really being clear and transparent about who is controlling access to data and what are their incentives and where are things paid for or not is a really important conversation.
It
but it has to take place not just in terms of the internet service provider because they're the lowest level in my mind. I think what directs traffic much more is probably Google placement and searches and whether you show up on a Facebook news feed. I think that's more likely to drive traffic than whether Verizon is trying to maybe slow down the speed to a particular website or not.
And John, you talk to school districts all the time. I got to ask you this, and I know you talk to ed tech folks, okay? But do the leaders of school districts these days? I mean, I'm going to read you Rich Kalata's quote. He's the executive director of ISTE. Quote, the internet is just sort of magic for a lot of people, and it just works, and nobody could really understand why. We don't understand totally why. All right? And he worries that because school district leaders, okay, don't really understand how this works, the interfaces or whatever it is, okay, they haven't been as vocal as they need to be about this. You deal with school districts all the time. Do they really understand? I mean, I know they understand broadband. They understand the need to get connected. They understand what's coming. But do they understand the background of all this? What do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think whether it's school leaders or just individuals, there's a growing awareness of how important access to content is. What is lacking in a lot of this discussion is really an understanding of where are the bottlenecks, you know, how does the access work, who's controlling access to content, who's throttling content, who's blocking content. When I was in India, for example, at the Global Entrepreneur Summit, looking at the Twitter feed, you know, there was content that was blocked. It said, you know, this may contain politically sensitive information, right?
All right.
So, from my perspective, that's as much if the topic of net neutrality has to do with access to information and content, then to me, the fact that this, you know, my Twitter feed was blocked is as much a net neutrality issue as whether or not maybe Verizon is going to throttle access to some content, because from an end user perspective, it doesn't matter to me. If it was Verizon or Twitter that was doing it, I couldn't get access to it. And so I think as a nation, and that to me is the biggest value of this net neutrality discussion, and all of the passion and all the concern about this has awakened a very important debate, and that is about access to content, access to information. Larry, you and I are old enough to remember a different era when, you know, there was your cable TV and you had, you know, you had the sort of the standard television
stations.
Oh, no, John,
I'm not that old. What was that like? What was that like?
And pay stations, and you kind of knew what the different channels were.
Yeah.
And you kind of knew what the rules were for those different, you know, the big three networks. They had sort of different, you kind of knew what it looked like and what the news was like. And, you know, and... And then you knew what the pay channels were like and which channels the kids should or shouldn't watch, you know. The world is not so neatly defined now. But yet we all need to kind of come to grasp with an understanding of, you know, what is out there, how is it coming to us, what might be blocked, who might be blocking it, who might be paying extra to get material in front of us. Again, to go back to the sort of the old-time cable television, we understood that there were ads. You know, you're watching a 30-minute sitcom,
right,
and
right,
there would be ads. Okay, I get that. So these people are paying for this show. Well, and in today's economy,
we have,
in the digital economy,
we have advertorials on TV all the time now. You know, by the vacuum
cleaner.
Yeah,
yeah, you know, but yeah. So in today's economy, it's, you know, people are paying for ads. They're also paying to have their content promoted or prioritized,
mm-hmm.
whether that's on Facebook or in Google, Twitter, so on. They're prioritizing,
ooh,
and some of that may be transparent, but some of it may not be, you know. So it is a really healthy discussion, I think, for us as a society to talk about what are the norms, what are the standards for access to information. And in the meantime, for schools and libraries, you know, they need to make sure that they are telling their ISPs they are only going to do business with ISPs that are not blocking sites except for what the school asks them to block or what, you know, that they,
right,
that they have free open internet and that the schools have full access to that. Unfortunately, again, schools and libraries are in a position where they can, in almost every case, demand those sort of terms and just require it from the get-go. And because, you know, that should be for the school to decide, not for their ISP.
So is net neutrality, and I'm getting the feeling you think this is it, I mean, it's a catchy phrase right now, admittedly important, but is it a tempest in the teapot, all this concern?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it is a really important discussion. And,
well, I agree with that.
You know, if you are asking me, should I have as much access to, should I be able to choose and prioritize the websites that I go to? I think so. You know, that's kind of a freedom of speech. It's access to information. If that's the discussion, I think, you know, yes, yes, yes. Now, do you want to debate FCC regulations? Do you want to talk about online access to content and paid prioritization and, you know, what the social media companies do? I mean, there's a big discussion then beyond that of, well, how do I make sure that I have access to the content that I want to have access to? And that is a bigger discussion than just the FCC regulations.
John, let's say prices explode, that the net neutrality, let's say this, I'm not saying it's going to happen, really makes great for Facebook, Twitter and Verizon and whoever the case may be. How do people make their voice heard back to the FCC, and can they change this at any time? Let's say it doesn't work. I hope it does.
Well,
you know,
I'd say first of all, in terms of the bandwidth companies, when we're talking about the ISPs, if their job is selling bandwidth, and this is where I think some of the concerns about net neutrality, from my perspective, fall by the wayside somewhat, is if my job is I want to sell you bandwidth, then I want to do my best to make sure you're getting bandwidth to whatever sites you
right.
want,
yeah.
right? Because you're coming to me for bandwidth. So, you know, I think in terms of helping impact the ISPs, it's voting with your checkbook. You know, it's if somebody tries to price themselves out of the market, then you don't go there. Now there are. You know, one of the concerns, of course, is areas where there is less competition. You know, where there's only one internet service provider and there's not good cell phone coverage.
Like rural schools. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so that is an area where I would argue that you have to make sure that there are some counterforces to make sure that, you know, you are protecting and making sure there those options are available in those areas where there really aren't options. But I don't think we should build the whole system around those exceptions, because the locations where there are, you know, there's only one ISP and no cell phone access to kind of compete.
Yeah.
Because in many cases now, cell phone speeds are beginning to connect with your or compete with those, you know, the download speeds that you might have on a cable modem, right? So, but you need to have those safeguards in place for those communities, those areas where you don't have competition. And I think that's where, you know, part of what the FCC is going to have to make sure they're doing and looking at is those communities and looking at what the prices are in those areas. But in the
Will
vast majority of communities,
that?
You've got multiple internet service providers that you can choose from and go with the one that you get the best rate with.
Let's just say the FCC has the best of intentions by doing this. Let's assume that, okay? Will they be able to keep a – will they watchdog this and make sure it's not hurting people?
Oh, I think
I
think that the FCC can watchdog a part of it. I think the ultimate solution is probably at a higher level, because it crosses the discussion we're having here is so much more than just what the ISP is filtering. It is really, to me, there should be kind of an overall overarching standard for access to content, and that everyone has to play by those rules. And that would probably then impact also companies like Google and Facebook and Twitter and AT&T and Verizon and, you know, and all of the players. Because, again, from an end-user perspective, I don't know all those pieces. I don't know the middlemen and all the other folks that are there, but they're all playing a role in helping to either block traffic or deliver traffic to me. And there should be some basic guidelines as a society for access to information and how we manage that and how we know what's being prioritized or not. And so the FCC they're very limited in what they can control. They can do a little, and even under the regulations that were just rescinded, you know, there was only so much they could do. I mean, it was things like, if they offer free Netflix or free Hulu, and that doesn't count against your data cap, that's illegal under, you know, net neutrality rules. Well, had they enforced that yet? No, right? So they had, to the best of my knowledge, they had not actually gone after Hulu and said, hey, you can't do this with T-Mobile or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in theory, that was illegal. If you offered content that didn't count against a data cap. So even though that regulation was on the books, I didn't see them enforcing it. I don't know if they could have or not. So they can control a little bit, but it's probably going to take Congress looking at and taking up this whole topic, this whole discussion, to really, I think, provide a common framework, a common set of laws and regulations that govern access to content, because it's a big issue. And that is, again, why people are so concerned. I want to make sure
that I have
access, right? But
yeah,
let's not forget in all of this the millions of people that aren't online. And that's what I find curious about all this
about
is
that.
Where is the outrage? Where is the concern for, the third of American households that don't have high-speed internet access at home?
It's unbelievable.
I think we have to make sure that not everyone is online participating in this debate. And so there's a good – there's a good third of us that aren't even a part of this discussion online.
Don't even know what the hell we're talking about.
And that has to be a priority as well.
It's really scary stuff. And I hope that – and, John, I hope all this works out the way you said. And you were right when you said at the beginning, there's really – I don't see a difference now between my internet and 2014, or at least I don't remember one. Okay. But I just want this thing to work out. I want it to, in this particular case, work out for schools and libraries because it's just key stuff.
It's about digital literacy. And, to ISTE's point, hey, leaders have to understand this. We all have to understand. We all have to because we want an informed nation, right? Informed individuals, active learners, and understanding where they're getting information, how they're getting information, and if there are roadblocks or impediments to that, we need to eliminate those or at least know what they are and what trade-offs we may be making. And it's a very important debate and a very important discussion. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us, including the school leaders, and make sure that we know what it is we're dealing with when we try to go online. And when we get on that browser or on our phone.
What it is when we say net neutrality, okay, it's easy to get angry at that. Oh, it's gone. Sounds great. It's gone. But we need to actually understand what that term really means. And you just did a good job of explaining it all, John. We got to go, old buddy. Santa Claus is coming to Edmond, Oklahoma.
Well, I'm going to be streaming Education Talk Radio for the next 2 weeks.
I know you will.
That's
I know
all
you
I
will.
I feel
sorry you'll miss Christmas with the kids, but this is a better way to do it, John. It's a better way to do it. Have a great one down there, my friend.
Thanks, Larry. You too.
Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye, John. Well, John Harrington, my good friend, funsforlearning.com, knows his stuff. What can I tell you? We'll archive the show, education-talkradio.org, and share this one with your friends. And we'll send out another link over on Twitter at EduTalk Radio. My name is Larry Jacobs. Thanks, John Harrington. This is and everybody else who contributed to that article, including that website, the 74 million. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for listening. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, boom.